Welcome to Fresno's Best Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Maddox. Today, we're highlighting someone who represents a quieter, deeper side of our city, the discipline of the body, the training of the mind, and the preservation of tradition. My guest today is Francisco E. Alvarez, the president and senior instructor of the Tai Chi Center of Fresno. Francisco's journey began in childhood, inspired by watching Bruce Lee and the Green Hornet, which sparked a lifelong commitment to martial arts. That early fascination evolved into a disciplined foundation across different martial arts before ultimately leading him to the internal arts of Tai Chi. In 1995, Francisco began his formal training at the Tai Chi Center of Fresno. He later apprenticed and became an instructor and now leads the organization as a nonprofit president and senior instructor. He teaches a 37-movement Yang-style form of Tai Chi with a deep commitment to preserving its integrity and lineage. Today, we're talking about discipline, tradition, community, spirituality, the body-mind connection, and what Tai Chi can offer Fresno today. Let's go meet Francisco. Infiltrate the pod waves on infinite quests, investigating, making convos to elevate guests. Politics, religion, culture, art, music, show some respect to the best little city left in the U.S. Fresno's best! Fresno's best! Francisco, where do you like to eat in Fresno?
Actually, I like the Golden Harbor Buffet, Chinese buffet.
Oh, I've never been there. Where is that and what's the food like?
It's on West Shaw.
Okay.
It's south. It's west of Marks Avenue. And it's almost any type of Chinese food you could want, but also other Asian types of food. They have a teppanyaki station that you can have fresh stuff made at. They have a pho station.
They have a teppanyaki station? That's a... Yeah. Wow.
It's what you want. You leave the plate there, and then you can go look at other stuff. They also have a sushi line in there, so...
That sounds amazing. I don't know how I've missed this. So you said West Shaw. Is that between the 41 and 99 kind of thoroughfare there?
Yeah, it is. Well, it's west of Marks Avenue, and so it's east of 99. And you will find it in the exact strip mall where you see Red Robin.
Oh, okay.
And then there's a Buffalo Wings. Well, it sits further back in there. And it's okay. A huge place.
Well, yeah, forget Red Robin and Buffalo Wings. That sounds like the buffet is where it's at. Yeah. Well, Francisco, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk with me. My interest in Tai Chi started actually at a bus stop on 19th Avenue in San Francisco. I had to take the bus to get to school every day, and I would see older women at the bus stop making strange motions that I didn't understand, practicing before the bus arrived. And then I would ask them questions, but they spoke no English, so I didn't really get answers. And eventually there was someone at the bus stop. I asked what they were doing, and they said Tai Chi. And so then I went on a spiral, and I actually found a class at my university, but I couldn't get enrolled. I bought the books, but I couldn't get enrolled in the class. And so I've been to one or two sessions, but it's probably been a decade. And so I really am here to just kind of learn from you about the different aspects of it. So I want to start with kind of a general question, which is, what is Tai Chi? What does it mean? And what is it as a martial art?
Well, Tai Chi is the more Americanized version of it. It's actually, if we translate to English, it's Tai Chi Chuan. And that translates to supreme ultimate fist or art, because it's a martial art. That's how it starts. But it has so many health benefits that you can run the gamut from your physical body to your mental body. I mean, down to, I just read a research paper to how it positively lets your DNA reproduce and stay healthy. I mean, it runs the whole gamut, but it is a low impact, yet it is an exercise in martial arts. So people think that, oh, you know, they're not doing much. It takes quite a bit, believe it or not, to relax and move in a synchronized motion.
Now, there's one kind of stereotype of Tai Chi that it's only for older people. Where do you think that comes from, and why is it false?
Well, that comes from the fact that, like you said, you saw older Chinese people doing it. And the reason that it's that way, unless in China you wanted to learn martial arts, Tai Chi being one of them, it's called an internal art because it start from the inside out. You would start young, but most people knew that they had to dedicate a lot of time and study to Tai Chi, so they started after they retired. And that's when people started saying, oh, it's for old people. But it's not, because most of these old people were starting Tai Chi when they were in their teens and in college, were doing other martial arts, or maybe even Tai Chi. While it is healthy and it can be restorative, young people can benefit from it. It can help you from doom scrolling. It helps with anxiety. It promotes your self-confidence. And I tell people in their 20s and 30s who, you know, love to hike or do all these activities, if you want to keep doing that in your 60s and 70s, you should do Tai Chi now, because it keeps restoring your body and keeping you mobile and active. Don't wait until you can't walk to try to learn to walk, because, you know, it's a little hard then. Yeah. But I see great success stories with people that are much older that are trying to augment whatever treatment for whatever malady is going on. And I literally have seen miracles happen for people.
There's another kind of term here that I think is often misunderstood, which is martial art. You know, mm-hmm. I think people think primarily probably Bruce Lee or a karate dojo or something like that. But it's a bigger term. Can you kind of unpack what that means? Because I think people associate it with kind of like fighting, you know, or kind of warfare of some kind, which is certainly part of it. But I think it's a broader term that we can unpack here for a moment.
It is a really huge term. Most people, when they think of martial arts or karate, they think of some Asian art. But if you talk to most people who understand any kind of training or any combat discipline, boxing is a martial art. And basically, it's any kind of art that involves the body, and not necessarily does it need to be for fighting. So some people train their whole lives and maybe using a spear or a sword, but to them, it's a way of exercising, staying healthy, mentally focusing, and meditating. So it doesn't always require fighting. Part of Tai Chi is another practice called Qigong. And in Qigong, it's a practice more of breathing and moving the energy within the body. And most Asian martial arts have an aspect of this. So when you think of a martial art, it's probably better to think of something that you practice for health purposes, that you could, if you ever needed it, use it, but more as a meditative way of improving yourself. And even if you think about karate, Crescent is a big karate town. I know that the teachers would always say, this is for self-improvement, not for fighting. You know, this is to improve yourself. So
kind of anticipated my next question, which is what is, you know, each craft or practice that we have has an ultimate like telos or goal to it. You know, I remember reading that wonderful book, Zen and the Art of Archery, and just kind of reflecting on like what we're doing and why we're doing it is so important. So for you, if you were to explain to someone that came into your studio, like, what am I aiming for in my practice of Tai Chi? Like, what would you explain to them?
Well, I would explain to them that the first thing they need to aim for is not to have a target or expectation. I want them to come in and just relax. I always tell students, when you come to my class, it has to feel good and you have to have fun. If those two things aren't happening, then let's talk. In order to do Tai Chi, because it is a discipline, and it takes discipline through your whole life, not just when you go to class, you have to give yourself the grace of practicing and being awkward and laughing at yourself, laughing at your teacher. See, I'm dyslexic. Some nights, I don't know my left from my right. And so, you know, we have a good time with that, because my students, even if they're new students, will say, right foot. I go, yes, that foot. So I want you to relax and I want you to feel what your body's telling you. I always tell students, now you're coming into an agreement with your body. Your body will say what its boundaries are and what it can do. You will respect that, but then you will also test those boundaries, because your body may have gotten complacent because of injury or something, and you've never fully explored what you can do. But whatever you can do, if you feel better each time you do this, then you've already won.
That's beautifully said. And if someone is starting out in considering exploring a martial art, there's such a variety, like almost like if you were going through a catalog, you could just keep turning pages for the different forms of martial arts. So if you were to kind of like describe what makes Tai Chi unique relative to martial arts, if someone is like thinking about selecting a martial art to pursue, what would be the distinguishing features of Tai Chi relative to others?
The distinguishing features about Tai Chi is it is not dependent on the person's size and strength. It is completely dependent on using your opponent's force and certain techniques and a set of principles that some are external, which is how your body is placed, where your weight is, all that. And some are internal, like sensing your opponent and yielding, which does not mean to give up, but that means making space for your opponent to just kind of miss or go by you. So when you're looking for any kind of martial arts, I always say, look and be and look at yourself and see what's going on. Are you not flexible? Tai Chi is a great way to start. Is it a child that you want into martial arts? Start them with Aikido. Aikido spends a lot of time talking about yielding also and not creating aggression.
Then I actually did Aikido as a kid. Yeah, I absolutely did. Yeah, that was very helpful.
And it's great, especially if people have a child that's reactionary. It helps to kind of get the energy out, but put their mind in a different place. And then they can move on to anything they want, kickboxing, whatever they want. But they've already gained that peaceful mind. And in Tai Chi, I tell people, why this martial art? Because you learn meditation just by doing it, because you have to be present. Like I said, it affects your body, mind, spirit. And it also allows you to constantly be successful. I have people that come to me and say all the time, I was never the athletic kid. I was picked last. And they become my best students because they're now able to, as they see it, be in a group of people. Some are athletic, but they're all doing the same thing and they're all having the same success or maybe having the same question. So it really levels the field. But it would really do, it affects your entire life. Your entire life, you start to become present in the moment.
Yeah.
I
was reading this great article about Tai Chi the other day in preparation for our conversation. And the author said, you know, you'll be astounded how your body changes. And I was wondering, because he was kind of enigmatic in the article about what that meant exactly. What do you think he was trying to say by saying your body changes?
The first thing people will notice is the strength that comes from their legs and their core. And they will be surprised because they're not doing these really physical things. But that's the first thing that changes. Their awareness of being in their body is a big change because now they're not going head forward through life. When you watch people walk, we throw ourselves forward and we catch ourselves with the other leg. That's the gait of a human being. But now it's more an upright, present movement through the world. But your body changes in the fact that your head doesn't drop anymore. You're grasping all things around you instead of being hyper-focused or maybe staring down. And just the overall flexibility but strength that you start to develop is so encouraging, especially for people who thought they'd never had it before. And then the one thing that they will sooner or later realize is, hey, my shoulders aren't stuck in my ears anymore. They're down. You know, I don't have a tense stomach anymore. You know, I'm actually able to relax while I'm doing things. So for each person, it's different, but they all have that common thing that happens is their body gets stronger. And so their confidence gets better and they do more things. They socialize a lot more too.
Yeah. Well, can we get a little bit into the background of Tai Chi? In my reading, there's all kinds of different styles, and I think they're categorized as family styles. What can you just maybe give us a kind of a broad overview of some of the kind of different approaches to Tai Chi so we can understand kind of the, you know, the range?
So Tai Chi has as many things coming from China, a long history, but there has been a lot that gets lost like any history. Things get lost maybe because of governments, revolutions, or what's allowed, not allowed. That happens in every country. So the furthest this can be traced back is to a Wudang Mountain, maybe 1,000 years ago or more, when a monk developed this kind of breathing and moving exercise to stay healthy and to keep the monks healthy. Well, eventually, the real history we can pinpoint, this art moved down to Chen village. So you have the Chen style. And the Chen style combined both the soft movements that you see now and also quick, fast movements like you see in Kung Fu. But the thing was that there were a set of 10 principles that you had to adhere to when you practiced. So in the Chen village, a young man named Yang Lu Chen went there. And he went there to work, but then he found that they taught a martial art, but they only taught it to the family. They didn't even teach it to the women at that time, because if they married outside the family, the art would be spread and they would lose their income. Basically, they were guards to royal families, or, you know, because of their martial skill. But Lu Chen was able to be admitted as a student. And then he went back to his province, and now you have Yang style, where he combined more of the Taoist philosophy into it. So when you have the Chen style known as cannon fist, you have the Yang style known as iron wrapped in cotton. So he made it softer and flowing, what you're used to seeing. And most of the other styles that you see come from Yang or Chen style. But each teacher, with permission from their teacher, added their own flavor, or maybe a martial art that they had, and they incorporated some movements into it. But all adhere to those same 10 essential principles. Those never change. And so when you look at the different varieties, you may say, well, you know, these people are moving straight back and forth. That's not Tai Chi. Yes, it is. You see other people moving in a circle, and that form is called Bakwa. And you go, well, that can't be Tai Chi. Yes, it is, because they all adhere to these principles of internal energy, a central core, and a mental and visual idea or intention as you're doing these.
So let's talk about one of the 10 principles that was most interesting to me, which is song, which is, I've heard it, different translations. Is it release? I also saw it translated as relax, which I guess might be an incorrect translation or inaccurate translation. In any case, I'm most interested in this because Westerners have a hard time relaxing. We're all so overworked and running from task to task. Can you talk about it? And I believe that's the first principle. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Well, it is probably the hardest thing to interpret or talk about. Okay. The fact that you said to release, yes, that is so great.
Okay.
Because you're trying to release all the tension in your body, all the tension in your joints. So yes, release is an aspect of it. But song also has an internal aspect, because we're dealing with qi energy. We're dealing with energy of the body, your opponent's body, and the qi around you. So when someone says song, and Yang Chen Fu, who was our teacher's lineage, Yang Chen Fu's was the great-grandson of Yang Lu Chan, the founder of the Yang style. I heard that all he would ever say was relax, relax, sung, 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 that, and that it was like a chant to him. But of course, in Chinese, their culture, they know more the depth of the meaning. So not only does it mean to release, but sung is also kind of intelligent. It tells your whole body to be alive, but not to be in, say, a flight or fright mode, but just to be aware of everything around in a peaceful, calm manner. So song, you can bring it down to, okay, you're practicing and you feel tight. That kind of just exhale. That's a type of relax. Another one is throw the joints open. Are you holding your arms up for dear life? Relax the arm, release it. There's another song that you have. In Tai Chi, you always want all the weight, whatever it is, whether it is mental weight, whether it's physical weight, spiritual weight, You want it all to drop through your body, through the floor. That's what you're looking for. So Sung, both of those interpretations are right, because these principles were written in old Chinese, and it has now changed. There's very few people that read old Chinese to this day. And to interpret Chinese into English, even by a Chinese person, can take a committee of 20 people who cannot agree on one word. So your assessment is completely right. It's a form of relax, but being completely, but having, let's say, having full potential available to you in a split second.
Okay.
You're not anxious. Relax is also part of the mindset, being present.
Yeah. I have a lot of friends that are do strength training, some do bodybuilding, things like that. Does the concept of strength within the world of Tai Chi, is it different than strength than we understand kind of in the world of, you know, weightlifting and, you know, competitive bodybuilding, things like that?
It's very different.
Okay.
We don't emphasize the bigger muscle strength. What we're trying to develop is, of course, a healthy body. And people that may lift weights can do Tai Chi. You know, they just have to make sure they stretch after every repetition of weights. They have to keep those limbs. But what we're looking for is you have what are called stabilizer muscles all over your body. They're the ones that keep you upright. So we work on those muscles and stretching the ligaments and tendons to make them stronger. Ligaments and tendons will fail you if they've never been stretched because they start to atrophy. Your range of motion is gone. So if you've ever had a twitch, you know, so sometimes the stabilizers of smaller muscles are called the twitch muscles. So that's what we're trying to develop so that we don't have to use great force, but because our core and our legs are strong, we can draw up the energy from the ground. Now remember, Tai Chi is ancient. So we draw the energy up from the ground as we sink our center of gravity, and then we manifest it through the hands. And so it sometimes can feel like an electrical jolt hitting you, but it doesn't require you to be bulky and muscular. But if you are bulky and muscular, you can still learn the same thing.
But so it sounds like strength and power might be kind of, you know, intermixed within Tai Chi.
If we look at muscle, we're looking at force.
Right.
But what we're looking at is strength, which is different than force. I remember one of our great teachers who actually lived in San Francisco, Ben Lowe. He's since passed away. He was way up in his 90s. But he would always yell at us, no force, no force, no force. So, yeah, there is a difference between the strength and the force, you know. So absolutely correct. There is that.
So like when you're teaching, and we'll talk about your teaching practice here in a bit, but when you're teaching and you're working with a student that's kind of transitioning from a novice to a little bit more of a, you know, an advanced student, what are the kind of physical things you're looking for? How do you, you know, that whole body connection that you're pursuing, right? Like what are the physical manifestations of that? What does it look like?
That's a great question, because I do look at the physical first, because the first five in Tai Chi are physical. The last five are all internal. But a student must be able to fully separate weight and take an empty step. So I'm looking for balance. They need to have that balance. And that's one of the hardest things to get is balance. Then in Tai Chi, when you move, every part of your body starts at the same time and arrives at the same time. So I'm looking for that coordination. Is that coming together? And then another thing that I look for, but it's really not physical, but it's the questions they're asking, because they have now started to look at what they're doing and questions pop up because of how they're moving their body. And most of those questions they've already answered for themselves. And I just have to say, yes, that's really good. I look for somebody who practices, because class time's now practice time. Class time is time to learn something new or apply something new. The way to succeed in Tai Chi is to have perseverance and practice every day, twice a day. That's the way. So I look at, you know, are they practicing, how engaged they are. I have some people that show up because they need to socialize. That's perfectly fine. I'm so happy. I'm happy to have a community of people doing whatever is making them happy. That to me is fine. And then I kind of, you know, now and then I'll just sit back and watch them interact with each other and see who's the one that's like really wants to be helpful and really is trying to tell them, oh, this, you know, this is what I think or this is what I got. And I go, yeah, those people are hooked. They're in love with Tai Chi. And it's my job to give them anything and everything I can. That's my job. That's why I chose it. Well, not a job. I do it for free. Yeah. Teachers are not paid at our school, but that's my commitment. So that's what I look for. You know, can you separate? Are you becoming more coordinated? And, you know, kind of what are your questions? What is your investment in yourself? Not in the school, not in me, in yourself. Mm. So it's a strange art where you practice with a group, but you do it for yourself.
Mm. That's beautiful. Well, I've had a couple different yoga instructors on this podcast in the past, and we've often talked about working, you know, with students in the West, where you're practicing, you know, an activity that has, you know, deep spiritual components to it. And, you know, sometimes those are foreign to people that are practicing it, particularly in yoga studios, but I imagine in your space as well. How do you think about the relationship to philosophy and spirituality in how you teach and working with people that are maybe not of that background?
It could be challenging. So all of the students are told, read the Tao Te Ching, which, you know, it permeates every martial art, but especially ours in Chinese martial arts. And then the Tao Te Ching is not a religious doctrine, and it's an observation of nature and how we are in it. So it's philosophy. So the spiritual aspect, when I talk spirituality, I talk, well, spirituality is your philosophy of how you are in the world. Religion is a building in a book, you know, so you can transcend and melt them together, but you still, you need to find that, I call your personal moral compass. What works, what makes you feel good about yourself at the end of the day? So I have had those things happen, and many martial arts schools here have had it happen, where I've had programs call me and they have people in program and they want to bring them, but they want to make sure I don't teach meditation because that would go against their doctrine or whatever their teaching. And we don't teach anybody anything that they don't want to learn. They can not do it. It's free will. You know, we don't have long-term contracts. We're not a cult. We just believe in the miracles that Tai Chi has done for us as teachers. And we see it in students. So that's why we do it. So it's difficult. But once a student reads the Tao, or even just looking at the principles, when you get to the last five, we're talking some internal stuff. We're talking about, you know, sensing your opponent and doing, and most people in the West are uncomfortable, you know, and most people in the West aren't used to being close together.
Yeah. Well, I was going to ask as kind of a follow-up to this question, you know, you see a lot of yoga studios where it's kind of become totally divorced from its origins, and it's now just like an athletic stretching activity. Do you think that's even possible for Tai Chi? Because it feels like it's so mixed and intertwined that it's hard to really separate that.
You cannot separate the martial, the internal, and the form, because the form is the form, and it's your gateway to the internal, and the internal comes from the Taoist philosophy. So you cannot eliminate those. You have to have the aspect. I've seen places where they have taken a lot of it out, and I can only see that it's really has not become Tai Chi. Well, let's say it's not Tai Chi Chuan anymore. It's Americanized Tai Chi or Westernized Tai Chi or wherever they're doing this to it. And I think it does a disservice. I mean, there are people that I have, they don't care about the martial aspect, but you have to be aware of it. When you do the solo form, you have to imagine an opponent in front of you because your hands need to be in certain positions. You need to be in certain positions or else you never coordinate. And coordination is part of being present. So Tai Chi does not lend itself to that. I know that there's many programs up there that have developed taking parts of Tai Chi from all different styles and calling it Tai Chi for this or Tai Chi for that. But I really don't see lineage certifications. If you looked at my certification, my student certification, or even on our website, you see a direct line back to Yang Shen Fu, the family of Yang style, and that's what we teach. So I had someone call me the other day and wanted to know I could teach chair Tai Chi, and I said, no. I said, we teach authentic Tai Chi Chuan. Well, can you modify your form? I said, no, I can't. And honestly, I cannot, because this is what I teach. If there's somebody out there who figures out how to really modify it and really teach real Tai Chi, good. But
yeah, you can only bastardize something so much before it loses what it is at its core.
And I don't want to encourage people that their lot in life is to sit.
Yeah.
I've had people come in and I say, bring your walker. And we will put a chair behind you, but you will stand, you will do some movements. And when I stop to say something, you will sit down. And they don't realize they're getting leg exercises because they're sitting up and down. But it's perfectly fine to have something to assist you if you're off balance. But I don't want to encourage somebody to stay seated.
Yeah.
You know, but then again, I look and say, well, people that don't have the ability to stand, maybe spinal cord injuries, whatever it is. Yeah. Let's find out what really works for them. And let's give them that stuff. Let's give them stuff that really works. Don't grab something and say, well, we'll just plug this in. Let's really do some research.
Hmm. Let's transition now and talk a little bit about you and the studio here in town. Can you give us kind of an overview of how one becomes a Tai Chi instructor? What's that path look like? I'm sure there's a variety, but maybe you start with your own and you can talk a little bit about the process.
Well, the process is the same process that I've known since I started. So when I started almost 30 years ago, probably, it was just for my health. I went there, I was highly stressed. The doctor said, you better do something or you're out the door, honestly.
Yeah.
So I can say Tai Chi saved my life. So I showed up there and I started to take it. And almost immediately, I was enthralled with it. I was enthralled with the aspects of just the movement. I didn't know anything else about it, philosophy. So I studied and I learned the form. And then I was told, well, you can move on now to the refinement class. And there happened to be another beginner's class right before then. So I decided to do 2 hours, the beginner's class and the refinement class. Well, the teacher that was teaching that class, she noticed that I was helping students. You know, when we took breaks or whatever, that I was helping students. So she said, you ever thought about teaching? I go, no, I've never thought about teaching. And she said, well, I think that you should help me teach. And I said, okay, because I came from the old school, which your Shifu says, you don't question. That's my old school training. I don't do that with my students. But so she mentored me. And I taught for about 3 years or 4 years with her, side by side. And then I was given a class. And so it's a lot of one-on-one mentoring.
Yeah.
And not only is it you, when you teach, you get better at what you do. That's a given. That's
another thing I was going to ask you, not to interrupt, but just how does practicing feel different when you're doing it in a modeling or a teaching form versus just practicing it yourself and following along in a class? Like, what do you feel in your body that's different when you're teaching?
When I'm teaching and I do form or I do a section of the form, I feel more like I'm posturing and I'm not floating. I'm not, as they call it, swimming in air. You should feel like you're swimming in air. Because I want my body to be accessible to them when they see it. And also, I'm talking, which when you do Tai Chi, you don't talk. So you get out of breath. So there's more tension in my body as I'm talking through something. But when I do it, literally, it feels like I just think of setting my body in motion, and then there's no more effort. I just go through all the sequences, and then I'm done. And there was never any effort in doing it. And it literally feels like I'm being carried through the form. Big dynamic.
Wow. Do you feel like you need some balance yourself in terms of like making sure you have your own practice to complement your teaching practice? I imagine some people, you know, they might overteach and burn out or lose touch with the craft, and, you know, it might make them worse teachers if they don't have that like set practice for themselves.
You're so absolutely correct. We have a thing that's called teacher syndrome. And one of the teacher syndromes is because we have an upright posture is, you know, we're talking and we'll say, well, I need you to move your left foot and the head drops. Then all of a sudden it starts to become a habit. So as teachers, we tell each other teacher syndrome and tell them what they're doing. So it is very important for us as teachers to have our own practice still twice a day, every day without fail, unless, you know, you're really sick, but even you can do a little then. Our private practice has to continue because we continually learn. Each time I do the form, I learn something new and I can take it back to my students. You know, I tell them, I'll come to you and say, you know, let's do it like this. And, you know, I know it's a little different, but, you know, it's easier. And then I said, okay, week later, I come back. Remember what I told you? Forget it. This is easier. I just discovered it before class, or I discovered it yesterday. So Tai Chi, you never get to the end of learning. That's the good thing about it. It keeps your brain sharp.
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about who comes to your classes? Like the kind of the makeup of your students in Fresno. I'm really curious, like the people that are interested in who these people are coming. Are there patterns, or is it kind of just random? Is there age groups? Like who comes?
Well, it's interesting because of the location change.
Yeah.
At one time when we were down on Van Ness in the Tower District, we got a lot more students from, say, college or, you know, people that were in that area. But usually, and I don't know what the reason was, that as time shifted and Tai Chi got put on Time Magazine, Harvard did the Tai Chi study, that we started to get people that were in their 50s and older showing up for Tai Chi. So it did change in those demographics. And most of them were still very healthy, they able to do Tai Chi. But right now, we're lucky that we have a pretty good mix of people, their late 30s, up to people in their 80s, we have in there. And so it's now running a bigger gamut. But I did notice that when I started, it was mostly males. Now it's mostly females.
Interesting.
So unless the wife drags the husband. Yeah, so it's kind of interesting how it shifts. But we're always reaching out. You know, I've been using social media to get the word out that, you know, it's for all ages. How can help you? Like we spoke about, how I can help you in your different stages of life.
Yeah.
And, you know, hopefully we get younger and younger people, because I myself, my goal is to maybe get some teens or some young adults who have ties to Fresno so that I can hand over the legacy of the school.
Yeah.
And they can continue forward for the next 50 years.
Mm. You know, Francisco, I'm always thinking about kind of, you know, the health of a city, you know, what, you know, there are cities that are healthier and less healthy, and the health can be, you know, looked at through a number of metrics and tools. I'm curious, what do you think, how do you think Fresno would change if more people practice Tai Chi here?
If more people practice Tai Chi, I honestly think people in general that are still in the workforce would take more time to do outside activities because their body would feel strong, the endorphins would be there, and they would take more time exploring what's right around us, which we, Fresno, yeah. But what's around us? Amazing rivers, lakes, mountains, you know, we got everything.
Yeah.
So I think that that would do. But I also think that as the generation gets older, that it would keep people in their home longer because they're able to stay mobile. They're able to still be around. And they have a group that's not their social group from when they were coming up through life, but a broader group of people that they keep socializing with. Because as we get older, our knit group of social people in our lives, they start to pass away.
Yeah.
And if we don't have an outlet for a bigger form. Now, if we have kids doing Tai Chi, just self-confidence, just not being affected. I don't think social media is evil, but not being affected by the negativity in social media. Yeah. The doom scroll, that is a real thing that happens. Just that confidence, just doing something, meeting other people with a like mind. I mean, you can't walk into a high school and say, hey, does anybody want to have a Taoist club without everybody pointing at you and starting to say things about you? You know, kind of, you know, and give them the ability to understand whoever you are, it's okay.
And there's such beauty in intergenerational practice, you know.
Yes.
I, you know, I haven't been connected to a religious community for a while, but I think that was one of the things I valued most when I was, you know, just interacting with people of all ages. And I think we've become so, you know, segmented and segregated by our age ranges. And we, you know, like I used, when I lived in San Francisco, I volunteered at an AIDS hospice, and, you know, I would kind of basically just sit with men who were dying of AIDS and just kind of watch TV and hang out. And they were of all ages and all demographics. And I learned a lot, but there was something that I could learn about what a different stage of life is like, or even what dying is like, or preparation for death. That, you know, if you just are only around people in a certain age category, you're only going to get a certain lens. And the same is true with the older people in that hospice. They loved my vitality because I was 19 and coming in and, you know, my whole life in front of me, my ears stuck back in the head and just like ready to, you know, everything was my oyster. And so there was some kind of beautiful balance when you have all of these people in one space together. And I think, you know, a practice like Tai Chi is fantastic for that because I think everyone can do it. And yeah, and I agree with you. I have a couple more questions. What can you talk with us a little bit more about the Tai Chi Center Fresno and its offerings, how people can get connected, you know, the kind of the logistical things, and then we'll close with book recommendations.
Sure. So the Tai Chi Center Fresno itself is a nonprofit organization. And so whatever money we collect, we pour back into our community. We try to make scholarships available. We are just getting back on our feet because when the pandemic hit, it was suspended for 5 years. So imagine zero students and then getting back on our feet. So we're pretty happy right now that, you know, we've got 4 full classes going on during the evenings and 1 on Saturdays. So that's a big plus. So the center has always been focused on the health of the community. And also in a small way by coordinating with Chinese people in here, other Chinese martial artists, on promoting this culture and martial arts. That's another big thing that we like to do. There was an event called Tai Chi Chi Gong Day that was done before the pandemic. By our third year, we reached 300 people. And we're planning to do it again coming this April to, again, get all those internal schools together one day and then just present it to the public for free and have them talk to the teachers and meet the students and, you know, maybe stir a little interest in them. Contacting us is easy. You can just go to our website, which is www.taichicenterofresno.org. You can go there and just send us an email. It has all the information about our classes. We offer what we call sessions. So we have a Monday, Wednesday session and a Tuesday, Thursday session. So we keep those groups together. And the reason we have sessions is because we actually had an interest of 60 people wanting to come. And at that time, we only had 2 classes. Wow. We want to work in our space.
Yeah.
So, but they would pick their session and then that's what they would attend. And it's $70 a month. And then the Saturday class only, and that in the evening sessions, we're usually finished in 6 months and restart new classes. The Saturday one is a year because the Saturday teacher does not have as much time to review like we do. Yeah. And so, but that class meets every Saturday and that's 50 a month.
Okay. So if you're a beginner, you can jump into either any of those sessions, or is there
in our starting period. So the reason is Tai Chi is a difficult thing to learn, and you can't jump in anywhere. You have to be there within the first two and a half weeks, or else you're going to be completely lost. You learn so much in just 2 weeks, so many fundamentals. But anybody can email us anytime and say, hey, I want to get on your list for July 2026. I'll put them on there, and then I'll send them a reminder. So twice a year for our evening classes, and every January for our Saturday class. And we go out and do demonstrations if people want them. We'll go out and do workshops for people if they want them. We don't have a set fee, but because we are a nonprofit, we will take a donation.
That's wonderful. Well, we conclude these podcasts each time with book recommendations. We already talked about one book, probably the most important book. Are there books beyond that you'd recommend to listeners?
Well, if you're interested in the Tai Chi Center of Fresno, I would pick up a book by Professor Cheng Man Ching. And it has a very funny title. It is called The Supreme Exercise for Health and Calisthenics.
That's a mouthful.
It is the book written by Professor Chen Man Ching, who was a student of Yang Chuk Fu, the great grandson of Yang Lu Chan. And that is the exact form that we teach. Not only does it have illustrations of the form and stuff, but it has insights. It kind of gives you it's like a prep class in itself. So when you get there, you don't hear all these strange words like sung, relax. What does that mean? Stepped empty, separation of weight, yin and yang, that kind of stuff. Yeah, those are two books that I would honestly really recommend. But the Tao Te Ching, I would recommend to anybody, regardless if they ever want to do anything.
Oh, yeah. It should be on every bookshelf. I remember when I picked it up in college, and it was just kind of it can be one of those like paradigm shifting books for folks. And it certainly was for me.
Great.
Well, Francisco, this has been a lot of fun. Thank you so much for talking with me and this beautiful conversation that we had.
Thank you so much, too. Fresno's best.
Thanks for listening, everyone. As always, you can support this podcast by leaving us a rating and review or by making a financial contribution at our Patreon page, which is www.patreon.com/Fresno's Best. We'll see you next time.